eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome into episode 297 of the Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. The Bruins, with an impressive win in Carolina over the Hurricanes. Bridget and Scott, this is a team that has kind of been a boogeyman for the Bruins in the last, I'd say, two or three seasons, really since the Bruins beat them in the bubble playoffs. Obviously, the Bruins had their way with them in the 2019 conference finals, but this and they've had the Bruins' number, but the Bruins were able to get a regulation win over the Hurricanes in a rink that has not been kind to Boston. So with that in mind, let's go to Bridget and Scott with the opening shifts.
Well, as always, I'm going to be Mr. Positive.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Trying to rebrand on the fly here, I see.
Well, listen, I think probably the number one thing I've been negative about with this team at times this year is their inability to hold leads and close out games in the third period. And we're now seeing a team that is showing signs that they can do that. And Thursday in Carolina, probably the best example yet. They enter the third period with the 3-1 lead and really just, I think, suffocated Carolina in the third period, gave them very little, still, you know, was able to stay on the attack at times, spend some time in the offensive zone. They actually outshot the Hurricanes in the third period. And then when Carolina pulls the goalie for the extra attacker, Hampus Lindholm wins a race to a loose puck and sends it 150 feet into the empty net. So that's how you close out games. That's how you finish off teams in the third period in the playoffs. And that was against a very good Carolina team. So that was impressive. And it's something they've now done a few times recently. You know, Nashville on Tuesday, they go into the third period 0-0, take a lead, add to the lead, finish it off. Last week in Florida, they come back in the third period, tie the game, take the lead, close it out. So we're starting to see this a little more. You know, Washington was a game they didn't win in regulation, but you could tell they were really dialed in overtime with the 4-minute penalty kill. So we're seeing signs now that this team can play the way you're supposed to play late in games and is doing it. And I think that's important heading to the playoffs, because now, you know, probably more important than anything else, they can believe it. Like, they now have examples they can look at of, all right, this is what we have to do. We've done it. We know how to do it. We got to go do it. And instead of having like that creeping doubt of like, oh boy, like we've struggled in these situations a lot. Like, I hope we survive this one. So encouraging late season trend here.
Yeah, extending leads, playing with more desperation. And I don't want to like derail our opening shifts, but I do want to ask you guys, you know, they started playing with more intensity after Montgomery yelled at them. That Monday practice where he was, you know, making them do sprints and told them like the effort wasn't good enough. This isn't playoff hockey. And they come out and they are closing out games stronger. They are given a full 60-minute effort. Obviously, the one loss to Tampa in there in the 4-game stretch that happened after the, you know, him yelling and having that practice where he essentially punishing them for coming out with no or little effort in that practice in the games before that. So I don't know. Do you guys think Monty's message got through? Do you think this is more of a, hey, they just got on track the right time? Or do you think that that factored in to just give them that kick in the ass almost to be like, hey, season's almost over. We need this now.
I definitely think that it played a role. It'd be difficult to sit here and say it hasn't, right? The proof is kind of in the pudding. Now, whether or not it's specifically because of that, again, it's tough to prove it, but an educated guess is that it very much played a role in it. And yeah, this is what happened with the Bruins last year. They weren't playing with the desperation needed down the stretch for that light to flip that quickly in the playoffs. Now, obviously they were on Brad Marchand goal away in game five with a second left from like winning that series. So it's easy to look back and say they lost the series when they could have easily won it. But to answer your question in short, Bridget, I absolutely think that it's been a wake up call for the team as a whole. I think a few individuals have kind of gotten back into a lull, and we'll talk about that as the podcast progresses.
Yeah, I definitely think it did too. And I think as much as anything, it was like the players almost needed a sign of like, hey, when are we supposed to like really lock in for this last stretch? Because we talked about on Sunday Skate with Razor, where it's like 15 games to go. No, not yet. That's still a little too long. Razor didn't even think it had to be 10 games to go. He was like, I don't know, 5-6. Montgomery clearly decided it was 10 games to go, because that's what it was on that Monday. There were 10 games left at that point. And he obviously decided like, all right, enough. Like, now it's time to lock in. Like, you got to dial it in now, not 2 games from now, not 5 games from now. Like, right now, we're going.
Yeah, not start of playoffs, not game one. Let's practice a little bit before the energy level that we need to see. So yeah, sorry to take, you know, add a question to your opening shift, Scott. I'll get to mine. I'll throw in a quick one here. This isn't my actual opening shift, but Marshawn finally got his 400th goal. So there's that. But mine has to do with something that we talked about last podcast, and my opening shift last podcast was about Brazo, getting knocked out in the Nashville game, upper body injury, looked like it was his arm, and he went right down the tunnel, never came back. Well, we did get an update before Thursday's game. Montgomery spoke to the media and said Brazo had flown home. So he didn't remain on the road trip after the injury. He flew home to get more tests done and is week to week, which is, and by the way, that could change because he's getting more tests done, I believe, yesterday and today. They're going to have maybe an update. I'm not sure. You know, they could push that back, but basically they'll have a little bit more time and a few more tests to evaluate how long he's actually going to be out. But week to week does not sound good because, as we mentioned, only 5 games left in the regular season. And that's week to week is probably the worst time, like the most annoying timeline to me, because I think that's the most vague. I know like long term is vague, but at least you get the idea. Like week to week could mean, you know, 7 days, or it could mean 2 months. So that's why I don't like that designation. And hopefully, you know, we get a little bit more specific to know whether or not he'll be back for the playoffs, because he's been a big part of the team and he's been a big part of the power play, Ryan.
Brian,
I can't hear you. No, you're not muted.
You son of a bitch, microphone. yeah, that's a great segue, Bridget, into my opening shift, which is
it would have been. It almost was.
Almost was. Yeah, yeah. I think I just got 2 minutes for a delayed game there, but that's all right. So fortunately, it's not the Bruins power play going against us. Which, again, it's one thing to struggle to score; it's another thing to completely take momentum away from your team, and that's exactly what happened last night against the Hurricanes. It's like easily that game could have flipped on its head. The Bruins are up 3-0. They get a 4-minute double minor power play, high sticking to McAvoy. And look, there's a lot of things that went wrong in those 4 minutes. One of which that wasn't wrong was the entries. typically this team struggles with zone entries at times, and they were able to enter the zone. It seems like they kind of threw the kitchen sink at the X's and O's board to think of ways to enter the offensive zone. There was some transition plays that and entry plays that were drawn up recently. You could probably tell, but either way it worked. Once they got past the blue line, there was zero effort and determination to win loose pucks, to outnumber the opposition. When you have the extra man, there should never be a situation where the Hurricanes are not outnumbered 2-1 on a loose puck. And combine that with just poor decision making. The power play completely took away momentum from the Bruins. You score on that power play, you go up 4-0, game over. They don't score. They get no chances. They get two shots in 4 minutes. Okay. And then the Hurricanes go down. They get a power play. They get a 5-on-3 because of a cross check from Lindholm, and they score. And now it's 3-1. And then I think the Hurricanes may have gotten a power play shortly thereafter. Like, it's just one of those situations where special teams absolutely comes into effect in the postseason. Now, you can sit there and say, Brian, back in 2011, the Bruins power play sucked and they won a cup. I understand that, but the game has changed in the last, 12 years. The whistles they used to go away a little bit in the playoffs. They don't go away anymore. And there's far too much talent on the Bruins roster to be struggling like this. And I think it starts with decision-making when you're in the offensive zone, but also there's such a lack of effort and determination to go after these loose pucks and these board battles. Puck retrievals have not been good enough for this Bruins team.
Yeah, that's what's most frustrating, because like, especially these last few games, but really most of this road trip, it's been a pretty high effort road trip for the Bruins. Like, I think you've liked the effort they've brought most nights, close to all 60 minutes. And that power play specifically, that 4-minute double minor, it's like, here's a chance for a real kill shot. Like halfway through the game, you can be up 4-0, maybe 5-0 if you scored on both ends of it, but let's not get greedy. Like, just take one at some point in that 4 minutes and you end the game. Like, that's it. And you're right. Like, it was frustrating to watch them actually get in the zone and then do nothing from there. And like you said, not get on rebounds or loose pucks. Like, just didn't seem to be much urgency to get pucks to the net. Just nothing. It was like, it was almost like they were treating it like there were 4 minutes left in the game and all they had to do was run down the clock. And it's like, no, like, go for the kill shot. Like, try to end this game. And it just wasn't there. And like you said, like, then the door really opened for Carolina to potentially come back after that. And to the Bruins' credit, they settled back in, got a big kill late in the second, going into the intermission. And then, as I said, locked it down in the third period. But yeah, the power play, and especially the top unit, it's, that's like the one area of the game where it's like, someone still has to light that fire under them to be like, guys, it's time to go. There's now 5 games left in the season. Like, can't wait for game one. Like, now, right now is the time. Like, start getting aggressive, start wanting it. We'll see. They're running low on time.
It was very boring. That was a very boring 4 minutes that did not feel like there was any advantage, just because they weren't taking advantage. And to use a word that I used to hate when my coaches used it, it's lackadaisical. Mm. that's what it was. It was just, I'm not going to work as hard for this puck right now. I don't know. It's weird to see that, because that some of those guys do have a killer instinct. And then you see the second unit go out there and do a little bit more and have a little bit more energy than that first unit. And it just begs the question, like, what is it going to take? Because sometimes it's like, okay, they're getting the looks, but it's not going in. And other times it's like, no, the effort isn't there either. So, and that was definitely how it felt in Thursday's game. So it's problematic, especially when we mentioned, the personnel on the second unit that's been effective might be out for an extended period of time. And nobody thought at this point in the season, we're going to say, wow, losing Justin Brazeau it will be a huge detriment to the power play production and or like, you know, the tone set by the team. But it is, it genuinely is, which just kind of shows you how important he's been able to make himself, and you know, how effective he's been able to be at his role since coming in. But we had talked about how maybe he could potentially jumpstart some production from the first unit if you throw him net front, because he'd been effective there in the second unit. Obviously that option goes away with the injury. So yeah, and the power play, it still leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, and it, again, it's one of those realizations where we thought that the Bruins' Achilles heel might be maybe not enough offense or enough firepower. It's like, well, no, I mean, 5-on-5, it's, you know, they're playing well. I mean, they've played all these top teams well: Tampa, Florida, Carolina.
We're just trying to get bit again.
For those listening, not by me. It's Xerxes.
Xerxes came back and he bit me last time he showed up
on the YouTube video.
Yeah, he's trying to look at the camera, but he's too short, so his head's like right here.
But you know, it's interesting because if you look at the league statistics, the Bruins still have a top 10 power play or a top 12.
Yeah, that's still 10th.
But it's like, it looks so bad and stagnant. And then the Hurricanes, so the Bruins have a 4-minute power play. They don't get anything going. And then the Hurricanes get a power play and it doesn't leave the Bruins zone. Gensel's all over every single puck retrieval. It was polarizing. It was glaring. It's like what a power play should be doing and what a power play shouldn't be doing. And you're not always going to score, but like I said, you can't lose momentum. You should never have a 4-minute power play go by where there's two shots in 4 minutes. I don't even know what those shots were, but they didn't even set it up. And it's a problem. It's definitely a problem. And I think it's beyond personnel. I know a lot of people are calling for McAvoy to get off the unit, put out Shattenkirk or Lindholm, whatever. And I'm open to, like, you know, here and there, like changing things, but it's not a personnel thing. It's a mentality. They've interchanged a lot of these players, and it's a mentality. You have to be a wolf pack out there, honestly.
I wonder if one thing Montgomery might look at is maybe look for some opportunities where you can actually start with the second unit. And by that, I mean not like a full-blown switch of, you know, first unit becomes second becomes first, but maybe, you know, Pasternak was just on the ice to, you know, right before the power play, or Marchand was just on the ice right before the power play, or McAvoy. And you say, oh, you know what? Like, we'll get you out there fresh in, you know, 35, 40 seconds. And we're going to put out the second unit to start. Like, I guess sort of like maybe like built in excuses to do that. We saw him do that once or twice, maybe like a couple of weeks ago. And at that time, like the second power play unit was really playing pretty well. So I would be interested to see if there's opportunities to potentially do that. You know, also on the, yeah, so they have 4 power plays total and only 3 shots on goal. Like, just not good enough overall. So, yeah, gotta do something, gotta light some sort of fire. And it's all guys who should know how to do it. I will note that, you know, as much as I say, like, they gotta get it going before the playoffs, last year, if you remember, they were pretty cold going into the playoffs, and then the power play was not an issue in that series against Florida. I just went back and looked it up, and they went 11 for 27. They were 40% in that series. So, you know, I guess some of these guys have shown the ability to, like, flip that switch come playoffs, but
that was,
I don't think you want to rely on that.
That was very different power play personnel last year, right? Like,
there are also injuries. You know, Bergeron was out to start, so.
Yeah, but like this year, you know, the power play doesn't quite look like that. Think about the second unit and what that looks like. But.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of the same personnel, though. It's what, 3 or 4 out of 5 are the same.
Well, Geeky and Van Riemsdyk are not. sometimes it's Shattenkirk, sometimes it's Lindholm, but
yeah, oh, I mean, well, the second unit's different. I was talking about the first unit specifically.
Oh, I said the second unit. But anyway, they took the messaging from Montgomery in that practice, like we mentioned, like the you need playoff intensity now, we're going to do sprints. Don't you think that if he said our second unit is more effective right now, we're going with them, that messaging could help maybe boost the energy level, raise the energy level of that top power play unit, because it feels like they need something like coaching wise to just get the message through, because we know they can do it. I feel like they might respond to, all right, second unit is getting more time now, or like, you're gonna have to earn your ice time on the power play. Besides Pasta, like throw him out there the whole power play if you want to. But some of the other guys, like give more time to that second unit just as a message.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I don't disagree, Bridget. I mean, as far as last year, Scott, with the quick turnaround in the playoffs, I mean, yeah, definitely some different personnel for sure. I do think Pasternak was utilized kind of all over the offensive zone. He wasn't so stagnant in his shooting position. I remember, the goal down in Florida in game six, he was on the goal line. So then they'll probably have to get creative, but in general, if they just hunt pucks better and have a shot first mentality, it should rectify some problems. As far as last night's game goes, the other positives from the game was the fact that they did jump out to a 3-0 lead. And you could sit there and say, well, that was a weak showing by Carolina, and every team has games where they don't start on time. So be it. The Bruins took advantage of it. And Bridget, you mentioned Marchand gets his 400th goal. Pasternak with a beautiful, beautiful goal. And then again, just that Heinen, Zacha, Pasternak line on display with just tenacious in the offensive zone, constant movement. And looking to to find the back of the net at all times, and Heinen with another impressive that's not an easy goal for him with the puck coming across his body. That's not a typical one time position. He was able to snap it off in one motion. So I think that line looks great, and I thought that the Bruins' first period was obviously outstanding. You expect a pushback from Carolina in the second. I didn't have a huge issue with that because that's coming. It was more the power play that bothered me. And then in the third period, Scott, you mentioned they locked it down again. So all in all, it was a strong performance by the Bruins. And is this something that they can build off of going forward? They've played many good teams now. Very tough here this month.
I want to just highlight what you're talking about with Pasternak, because he scored that goal. Carolina just decided, hey, we're going to give him all the time space that he needs. It's like, you get the best players on the ice and you just back away from him to cover other people. But anyway, Pasternak, obviously, as a good goal scorer, saw the opportunity, jumped on it. But he also had that really great pass to Heinen for his goal. And it was, it was kind of lucky that it made it through, but it was a quick, accurate pass. And I feel like over the last few games, to the people who've been critical of Pasternak and how he plays, like he made a steal that led to a goal. Not this game, but I think was it the Nashville game? I don't know. It was on this road trip. It was recently. It was in the last three games. He's been making defensive plays. He's been moving pucks to the neutral zone. He's been winning battles to the pucks. He's been scoring. He's been assisting. You see his intelligence as a player, and that's part of the reason why that second line, or really it's the first line, Zacha, Pasta, and Heinen have been so effective. If you watch where a lot of it stems from, Pasternak is involved in most of those, if not all of those goals in some way, whether it be just, even if it doesn't show up in a goal or an assist, like he either won a puck battle along the boards, or, he directly affected the goal. And that's why that line looks good. And that's why whenever you hear the Pastrnak goes quiet in the playoffs or Pastrnak isn't a team player or whatever the stupid narratives that get created are that aren't based on anything. Like you watch, if you actually know what you're watching this week, you're watching Pastrnak affect the game in a lot of different ways and use his whole skill set. It's not just a goal scorer. It's also a playmaker.
Yeah. And Bridget, this ties in well to column I posted Friday morning, looking at Pastrnak's MVP candidacy, because it's interesting. Last year, he finished second in Hart Trophy voting. I think you can argue what he's doing this year is even more impressive. Obviously, the goals are down, but he's already blown past his career high in assists. He's on pace to finish with the exact same number of points, 113. And the Bruins have had to rely on him more. Like, he's had to be a bigger part of their offense this season. Last year, he had a point on 37.5% of all Bruins goals. This year, it's 42.1%. Last year, he was on the ice for 47.8% of all Bruins goals. This year, he's been on the ice for 51.6% of them. So they've relied on him more. I do think he's made improvements in his all-around game as well. But interestingly enough, he's probably not going to get nearly as much Hart consideration. And, you know, really the point like I wanted to make, and I won't go through everything I have in the column. People can check it out if they want.
Because he wants you to read it.
Yes. Gotta get my page views, Bridget. Yeah. But, you know, really the point is like that he might finish fifth or sixth in voting this year, but that's through no fault of his own game. Like, that's not a reflection of his game taking any sort of step back. It's just more guys are having incredible seasons around the league this year, from McKinnon with 130 points, Kucherov with 133, Connor McDavid's right up there again, Austin Matthews has 63 goals. Like, it's just tough to argue against those guys, and all their teams are obviously super reliant on them as well. So, you know, it's I think he should be top five. I'd probably have him fifth, but you know, he's not going to finish as high as last year, even though his all around season might actually be more impressive and more valuable to the Bruins.
Yeah. When you were like evaluating that, you were, you've been looking at these numbers over the course of the last month, I would say, or maybe longer, I'm not sure, but I've watched you, up on the ninth floor, kind of like go through the stats, in particular the percentage of goals that the player was involved in and how the percentage of goals they were on the ice for. And didn't you say Kucherov had like the highest, like most ridiculous number of like how many goals he factored into this year?
Yeah, he has had a point on 49.8% of the Lightning's goals this season.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That's oddly enough, he was at 50% exactly before last night. He had a 3-point game, but actually dropped below 50% because Tampa scored 7 against Montreal. So,
yeah. Oh, wow. Man, that's you know, you have a great game, and you know sometimes that happens. But I'm sure he'll get back at 50% probably at some point. He's having such a good season. But Pastrnak, you said like he's up there in the 40s. So, and he's obviously so important to this Bruins team. So I don't know where you guys want to go from here, because I feel like maybe up who's up, who's down kind of naturally goes into this. Because we had a lot of ups this week, and that includes on that line.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And the one thing I would mention for Pastrnak's favor compared to all those other players that we mentioned real quick is that he's definitely had the most negative turnover on his team from last year, right? Like, I mean, we all know who the Bruins lost personnel wise. You look at Toronto, they added players, you know, I mean, yeah, they lost O'Reilly, but he was a deadline acquisition. Colorado's more or less the same group, Edmonton. So Pastrnak was not asked to do more, but he needed to do more, at least on paper, than these other players because of the delta in paper talent between seasons. That said, the other players you guys mentioned, without them on their respective teams, where are those teams as well? So they're also super valuable, you know, like Scott mentioned.
Where the hell's Toronto without Austin Matthews?
Right.
Like Pastrnak doesn't have another star with him, really. I mean, if you look at it, like Marchand's second on the team in scoring, he's 41 points behind Pastrnak.
Yeah.
And it's like, you'll get all those other guys. You know, MacKinnon has Mikko Rantanen as his full-time right wing. He has 101 points.
Right.
McDavid has a 50-goal scoring Hyman, sometimes Dreisaitl on his other wing. Matthews, until Marner got hurt, usually had Marner. Sometimes he has Nylander on his line. Kucherov has Braden Point as a center. And, like, either Brandon Hagel or Steven Stamkos on the other wing. Like, you know, with all due respect to Pavel Zaka and Danton Heinen, who are both playing really well, they're not those guys. Like, they're not stars. So, he's doing as much with less around him.
And there's also intangibles too. I think, like market makes a difference too, right? If you're down in Tampa Bay, if Kucherov has an off season down in Tampa Bay, you know, life goes on down there. I mean, obviously Toronto, Edmonton, those markets are
not hyper. In Toronto.
Right. Those markets are on steroids. So Pastrnak doesn't have more pressure than Matthews and McDavid for sure. But, you know, it's in Boston, obviously, it's to perform is you have to do it. And if you don't, you'll hear about it for sure. But, Scott, you mentioned Heinen and Coyle. Definitely ups in my opinion. That line isn't up in my opinion. I'm not touching that line. Who knew?
Heinen and Zaka.
I'm sorry, who did I say?
Coyle. But Quill,
we also have some.
Yes, Heinen, Zaka, Pastrnak is what I meant to say. Who knew that was the line we all needed to see at some point this year? They are absolutely clicking, and I'm very comfortable with them as a trio heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, Bruins are outscoring opponents 14-4 when they've been on the ice 5-5. I mean, really can't ask for anything more.
Yeah, and Heinen's, I don't know if Heinen gets enough credit for how good of a skater he is. You know, I think he pushes the pace. Pastrnak is a great skater. Zaka is a great skater, but I feel like Zaka moves faster than it looks like he's moving.
Long stride that
Heinen loves those crossovers, right? He's got those shorter strides, but he does get from point A to point B quickly, and he's a really smart player, and he has a good skill set. So yeah, that line's been great. Coyle, Marchand, as you guys mentioned, his 400th career goal, definitely ups. Lindholm has gotten a couple goals in the last few games to surpass his season total to that point. I think the goaltending has been great, and the defense has been great as a whole too. So if you guys want to dissect some of those areas as well for ups,
yeah, can I start with Heinen? Because you see on his goal that he's not just a facilitator. He's not just there to, and this is what makes the line good. It's like you have three threats. Sometimes you put a guy up there that complements Pastrnak or complements a good player, and they kind of get lost a little bit in that they don't need to be covered as much. Like you're covering the high end guy. This guy, he's a good setup. No, he's going to the net. He's finishing. He's also a threat on that line. So he's a good balance for it, because not only can he keep up with them, he also can be a threat, quiet threat, right? Sometimes that sneaky threat is what gets you. You're not maybe paying attention. You're thinking Pasta is going to shoot there, but you know, he slides it over to Heinen and he finishes. So that's why that line has the numbers it has recently, because all three of those guys have speed. All three of them can finish. And you can't really sleep on Heinen, even though he might not be the highest up on your scouting report on what you got to do to stop this line. He's definitely someone you do have to pay attention to, and that coming into the season, we did not see that coming, but it's worked. It looks good. That is a line that I don't want to see split up. We talked about the line shuffling last year in the playoffs. Like, do not touch that line. Keep that line together.
Yeah, I'll go to Lindholm and the defense here. I think splitting up Lindholm, Carlo, we had mentioned that like they had been struggling for a few games. Getting Lindholm up with McAvoy, I think, has really done him wonders. They've been dominant together, I think. And I think the numbers back it up when they've been on the ice. Bruins outscoring opponents 17-8. This is season long, so not even just this recent stretch. But outscoring opponents 17-8, 59% expected goals. That's dominance. They've looked great. I don't know if you ride this all the way through and go into game one of the playoffs with Lindholm and McAvoy together, but I really like how it's looked. I think it's helped elevate McAvoy as well. We've talked about, you know, Grizzly having an inconsistent season, and at times you see those old Grizzly McAvoy flashes, and at times it looks like they're not what they used to be. You know, if you can get those two guys on the ice together for 25 minutes a game and then kind of figure things out behind them, which is where things get interesting. You know, I said on Sunday Skate, like, Lauri Kahlo as a pairing doesn't make a ton of sense to me, because Lauri, you wanted more offensive situations. Kahlo, you wanted more defensive situations. But they were together in, I think it was the Nashville game, right? And looked good. And what they did was they kind of protected Lauri a little. Like, when Kahlo was out there for a D zone draw, usually they would have someone else out there with them instead of Lauri. I think you can do that. And, you know, you can use that pairing on the fly. And then I still like Weatherspoon Peak as your third pairing. I know they've tried some different things there. You know, Chan Kirk on his offside has been better than I would have expected he was going to look there. They tried Grizzly Peak Thursday in Carolina. Didn't think that was great. Maybe if they had more time together, they might start to click. You know, that they got stuck in their own zone quite a bit in that game. But, you know, you've got some options, and they're still sorting through stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see where they land. But I've loved the way Lindholm and McAvoy together has looked.
How'd you think Weatherspoon Kahlo looked? I mean, that's obviously more of a shutdown, like, on paper. That's your shutdown pair if you got Lindholm and McAvoy together.
I thought Weatherspoon played great. I think Kahlo was okay to good. Yeah. I mean, if there was a weak link on that pair last night, it was Kahlo. I mean, Weatherspoon, he keeps it so simple. And it's not that Kahlo doesn't, but maybe Weatherspoon just handles the puck better. Weatherspoon's really good at, like, assessing who he has to target, and then it goes right back to position. You know, he attacks, he goes back. He attacks, he goes back. He's like I don't really know how to describe it. It's kind of like a slinky. Like, it goes and it comes back.
I was wondering if you were going to say that.
I don't know. It's
other boomerang.
Yeah. Boomerang is probably a better way to describe it. But a boomerang kind of has that like circular motion. Like, he's like straight
out
line,
and back.
Out and back. But
bubble hockey just slides back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. But he's
just bringing up all the kids' games.
Yeah, but he plays with a little bit of nasty. I like Weatherspoon a lot, and obviously Carlo's not coming out of the lineup, so I think I just want to see Weatherspoon and Pete together. As far as the other two pairs, I like what Scott said a lot. And if you think about pairs, the number one D pairs the Bruins have iced in years where they've gone the furthest, right? 2011, 2013, 2019. Chara was matched up with the other top defenseman on the Bruins roster. It was Chara Seidenberg. It was Chara Seidenberg in 2013 against the Blackhawks. Obviously, they lost that series, but they go to the finals. That pair led them to a cup over the Canucks in 2011. And then Chara McAvoy was your pairing in 2019. Obviously, that didn't end perfectly, but my point is, when you have those two guys together, Grizzly was slotted down the lineup with, I think Kevin Miller was injured in 2019, but when Grizzly is on a third D pair, it's where he should be. And Scott, this is not coming at you. You're just spitting facts, but that graphic that came out about the D pairs with over 2,000 minutes played together or something like that. And what was the metric?
It combined like expected goals and actual goals and sort of gave like a combined number.
And that spanned over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And Charlie McAvoy and Matt Grizzly are at the top of that list. So this is, again, for the millionth time, this is not me coming at Grizzly, but I see that graphic and I say, great, still not winning a cup with that D pair as your top D pair. It's just not happening. You know, you watched the Hurricanes game last night, and there was a shift in particular where the Bruins are kind of pinned in their zone, and Jordan Staal has the puck in the corner, and he just A-frames Grizzly. And you sit there and you think to yourself, there's literally nothing Matt can do in this situation because he's too small compared to, if Jordan Staal wants to protect the puck against Matt Grizzly and keep the shift going, he's going to. And Jordan Staal's a big dude. He can do that against a lot of players. But my point is, if you're going to ice Grizzly, like, he has to be, I think, in your third D pair. I think it's time to go with the big boys, McAvoy and Lindholm together. And yes, I have said it all along. I want Laura in the top four. If it's over Grizzly, so be it, because I like that peak Wotherspoon pairing. You got a shuffling Grizzly or Shattenkirk on a third D pair here and there for a reason. Fine, go for it. But the D pair Scott just proposed, I'm sorry, that's who I'm going with. And it's not like Lauri just gives you size and Grizzly doesn't. Like, Lauri also brings a similar skill set. And so I'm not going to belabor the point, but I like those pairs, Scott.
Yeah, and if your third pair is Wotherspoon Peak, that gives you two options to serve as that cover for Lauri for those defensive zone draws I mentioned. Like, as Bridget said, we just saw Wotherspoon Carlo together for a game, and I thought they were pretty solid. Brian, I think you're right. I think Wotherspoon had the better game of those two. So you can move Wotherspoon up with Carlo for a D zone draw. And we've even seen them move Peak over to the left side and throw him out with Carlo for a couple D zone draws. So yeah, like I think that lineup gives you options while also keep giving you the like offensive dynamism that Lauri can bring to the lineup.
Dynamism, wow.
Which right now is just, it's more than Grizzly. Like, Grizzly's contributed offensively in the past, and we just haven't seen it enough this year.
Right. And also, I just want to say, I actually thought Grizzly played, like, I thought he played well last night. It's there's an element to his game where it's like there's only so much he can do, in my opinion. And I, the reality of the situation is that, like, especially in playoff hockey, it like size and stature matters. It does. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, you have the best hockey players in the world playing for the most coveted trophy, giving it their absolute all, and attrition is a factor in the playoffs. And again, like, and I would say the same thing about Samuel Girard in Colorado, like, or the same, like, obviously he's probably not coming out of their lineup, but I wouldn't feel comfortable, like, necessarily with somebody that small back there. It's just Torrey Krug, we saw for years, but Torrey had more bite to his game. Like, he just did. He played bigger than he was. And maybe that is where I would criticize Grizzly a little bit, but if it's not in the player's DNA, it's not in their DNA. I can't force it out of them. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying. And I do think he has strong suits to his game. Of course, he does move the puck well. He's smart. But there's a couple of areas where, whether it's his fault or not, I just don't think he should be in the top six this year in the playoffs most nights.
Also, I'm glad you just mentioned Krug, because as you reflected on past, you know, playoff runs and the loaded up top pairing, it's also a reminder that we've gotten so used to Brandon Carlo being on the shutdown pair and, you know, just buried in the D zone. Like, remember that some of his best playoff runs came when he was paired with Torrey Krug. So he can complement that more offensive guy. Like, he can do that too. So, you know, that, and that obviously that dynamic comes into play if he's paired with Mason Lauri.
Yeah. And he's gotten even better since then. Like, I think you could make a strong case that Carlo's game now is more sound than. So he probably has even a better ability now to cover for someone like Mason Lauri and allow him to activate offensively. I don't want to go too far into this though, because Brian has a hard out here in a few minutes, and I just wanted to bring up a few more ups. So we think goaltending as a whole, right, has been up. I think Swayman had a good game in Carolina. Olmark, great game in Nashville. Something that's really funny to me, guys, I don't know if you heard the press conference. I think it was the pregame press conference before Carolina that Monty did, where he goes, someone asked about the goalie rotation. He said he's comfortable using it into the playoffs. So, I mean, he's gone back to it. He said it's their strong suit and doesn't see why they would change it. And so, once again, he's reinforcing that. Razor kind of thinks he might be, like, throwing us in the wrong direction. I'm not sure. But what he's saying is he wants a rotation. But anyway, that's beside the point of what I'm trying to make here, which is that he says something like, Sway's doing great, and the other guy too. And I'm like, do you not remember Omar's name? Like, the other guy. Yeah. Sometimes he says stuff like that. And, like, sometimes he'd be like, yeah, the Finnish guy in Colorado, or like, and he'll just start naming numbers rather than actual names. He'd be like, Pasternak and Heinen and number 18 had a great game. And I'm like, why are we doing this?
He really has, like, coach brain when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
He's just like, when they're doing their game plan and all their whatever, their blueprints, everything is numbers only. So I think he just gets, like, locked in on that. It was almost like he was trying to be funny when he said the other guy, and it just doesn't, like, quite come across, because his humor can sometimes be dry. So
yeah, it's like
I don't know, like, just call him Omar, just call him Venus. Yeah, it's fine.
Do we need to tell you what his name is?
Yeah, I think we might have to get a Bridget Xerxes rotation going in the playoffs too on the podcast. Xerxes. But I think at this point, guys, especially if they're both playing well. By the way, when's the last time? This is such a ridiculously, like, difficult stat to look up. I don't expect anybody would have the answer to this. But when's the last time that an NHL team had a stretch where both goalies recorded a point within, like, a 5-game stretch? Because that's exactly what they did. I think Allmark and Swayman recorded points, like, 3 games apart.
Yeah.
They're both on the road trip. It was the Florida game for Swayman, and then the Nashville game for Omar. So that was three. Yeah, there's one game in between then, I think, right? So or two. Two.
So that's a little fun fact. But look, if they're both playing well, I really am more concerned about deep pairings and just the team playing the right way.
Now he's eating my laptop cord. Stop it.
He's gonna have to get a game. He's gonna have to get a one pod misconduct.
Instigator. This one.
Yeah. Unsportsmanlike. Chewing the cord. Mm-hmm. What I was just saying was, like, I just think that I'm less concerned about if they go with the goalie rotation or not than I am, like, how the team's playing. So.
Did you see that?
Yeah, we definitely just captured an attempted bite.
Yeah.
Don't know if he made contact.
Gotta be quicker than that, Xerxes. He didn't get me that time.
We got Bridget out there with Alex Burrows right now recording the pod.
Yeah, Chomper.
Nipping at the finger.
Goalie
rotation, though, I'm for it. Like, if I really don't care, honestly. As long as the team is playing the right way in front of whoever's in net, I don't care. Both goalies are playing well right now. Like, you want to go with it, I'm not going to argue it. Like, it's fine. So I don't know where you guys stand on it. I'm kind of cool with whatever they decide to do, honestly, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, I think, the most pro rotation all along, going back even before last year's playoffs. So I don't see any reason really to change. The big thing for me was you need to get Swayman going again, because he went through a prolonged slump after the All-Star break, and now he's starting to play better. And certainly, you know, Thursday in Carolina, not that he faced, like, an incredibly difficult workload, but he was really solid. I mean, just, like, looked in control. Really no bad rebounds. Didn't get scrambly. So that's good. Like, if he finishes strong, Omar's obviously been very good for, you know, probably the last month here. And if he keeps that up, then sure, you use both. And, you know, whether it's a strict rotation or, you know, two on, then go to the other one, or rotate the first two games and then decide from there. Like, however you do it, I just think you're setting yourself up to use both. Like, the one, you know, I kind of agree with Razor to an extent when he says, like, yeah, Montgomery's probably just not tipping his hand when he says, like, oh, well, I don't see any reason to go away from it. But the one thing I would hold Montgomery to is what I asked him about in Montreal, which was, can you rotate all the way to the end and then ride one guy? Because that's what they did last year.
And he said no.
And he said, like, no, I think we – I'm paraphrasing, but, like, I think we learned that, you know, it's tough to rotate all season and then expect one guy to handle the whole workload. So
yeah, and I think he mentioned, like, emotionally handle the whole thing as well. Mm-hmm. So not just like physically, but and I want to read you the quote Montgomery had pregame, just to be clear about it. He said, it's the biggest position of strength we have. Both have won huge road games for us. And he finished it out with, I don't see why we would change anything. Mm. So, I mean, and it's true. Like we saw, they showed on Essence Swayman's road record. It was like 12-1 and was it seven? I don't know. They've had a lot of ties. he only has one regulation loss on the road, which is crazy to think about. And you're going to need, and you know, playing in tough environments is something you do have to factor in the playoffs because it's different than the regular season. We heard a Let's Go Bruins chant in Carolina at the end of last game. Granted, I think a lot of people had already left, but you're not getting that in the playoffs. You're not getting a Let's Go Bruins chant on the road. Your goaltending needs to be able to handle those road matchups and not be affected by it. And I don't think either of them are. And I think they help each other out in that way. So I agree. I don't see any reason to go away from it. It logically, right? Not talking about the, I mean, well, this happens every week on Sunday Skate with Razor coming in and being like, nope, we're never going to change his mind because he's got the old school mentality. It's not going to happen.
He's such a like, don't worry, the sky's not falling player mentality when it comes to these things. Like,
yes, but also like that's just his old school.
Yeah.
Like this is what it's like, you know, when you're dealing with it,
but like they could be,
but it's like, this is like the one thing that gets him into like the sky could fall mode though. Is like,
yeah,
what if you rotate and one guy plays well, but they lose and the other struggles, but they win.
Well, I just mean in general, like his pro player like mentality is hilarious. Like the Bruins could be in like a 15 game losing streak, and he'll be like, "Look, it's a long season. They know when to turn it on and press the gas."
You
want to
know why I think he's like that though? I think that being a part of like talk radio makes you like that. Whereas like you hear the other side of it so much that you feel like you have to be that one person that's, you know, like you're hearing people just crap on the Bruins and like be super over dramatic about stuff. So he's just like, let's not do that.
He's putting water on the fire. Like, you know what I mean? Going out of his way to do that, which is
well, that's fine. Like I post that Pastrnak MVP column and posted on WEI's Facebook page and made the mistake like a little while afterwards, like looking at the comments. And it's like five of the comments are like, he turns the puck over too much. And I'm just like, I feel so bad for like the fans who have just had like radio poison their brain to the point where that's the first thing they think about when they think about David Pastrnak. It's like, man, like I legitimately feel bad for, it's like, that's a fan who's just lost the ability to like enjoy a great player.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Couple of things, Bridget, I do have a couple extra minutes, by the way, but just a few things like before we get to the down, just one last comment for me on the goalies. Like I am more of a traditionalist. Like I do feel like it's better to ride the one guy if he's playing well, just because he knows it's his net. I do think that the rotation, it does lead to times where inevitably you're going to be like, it's like a series winning game and maybe both goalies are playing well and you just don't know like, all right, which guy do we go with? I do think it could be tricky, but I also believe what you guys are saying is true as well, which is, if they're not used to sharing, if one guy's not used to carrying the load, they're not going to be used to doing it in the playoffs either. So I definitely understand that.
if we're being real, like, you're going to question the goaltending every game, even if you do decide, okay, just we're going to ride Ullmark the whole time. Like,
yeah.
Every single game, and this is going to be fans questioning, I'm not talking about coaching staff necessarily, but like, you're going to second guess every time someone loses, no yeah. matter what, no matter if you're rotating, no matter if you're not, like, it is a conversation every single game.
Sure.
When you have two good goalies, it's not like when you have, you know, some random dude from Providence is your backup that's played like three games this, during the season. Like, it's not like that. So you're always going to, and then obviously we have a big chunk of the fan base in Boston, huge Jeremy Swayman fans. So if you choose Linus Ullmark over him, then the Swayman fans are always going to be like, well, when's Swayman coming in? Like, why isn't he playing? He had better numbers or whatever. Yeah. Like, he was on the All-Star team, and it's going to happen either way. So
yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, if both goalies are playing really well and there's a huge game, like a pivotal game, I don't envy Monty having to decide which one to go with. I mean, obviously, if they're both playing really well, you'd feel comfortable with either one. I'm just saying, I don't envy him in this position necessarily. So two downs that we could think of off the top of our heads. Trent Frederick, pivotal goal against the Panthers in the third period to tie that game. Aside from that, 4 points total in his last 16 games. Jake DeBrusque is also down for us. And these two individuals are imperative to the Bruins' success in the playoffs, in my opinion, because unless you expect David Pastrnak to lead you to a Stanley Cup by himself, pretty much, like, there's going to be a lot of times where he's probably negated. And they're going to need the depth scoring. And I'm looking beyond Marchand and Coyle and Zacha. I'm looking at DeBrusque and Heinen. And the last 25-game sample for Jake DeBrusque, in my opinion, is the most telling, I think, of his career. it kind of depicts it right here. So the last 25 games for Jake DeBrusque, we'll break it down. The last 5 games, 0 points. The previous 10 games, 12 points. The previous 15 games, 2 points. That illustrates right there just how hot and cold he is, more often cold than hot. It's not a 50-50 hot and cold. It's like an 80-20 cold versus hot. But when he's going, this team, I think, is really difficult to defeat. When he's not, they're just another team with good defense, good goaltending, and a couple top forwards. And that's not going to be good enough to beat the teams that can roll out the depth that you could have if players like DeBrusque and Frederick pick it up when it matters most. So I don't want to damn them yet because the playoffs haven't started, but I do want to forewarn, like, if those guys go cold in the playoffs or stay cold and the Bruins lose, it's going to be tough to not look at some of those players and illustrate that's probably one of the reasons they lost.
Yeah.
Now you got that Katy Perry song stuck in my head. Yeah.
I'm just like, over here. Scott was singing that before we started recording.
Yeah. He loves Katy Perry. Sorry, Scott, you're going to say something.
I was going to say, like, this is an especially critical stretch for Jake DeBrusque because you mentioned, like, his last cold stretch lasted 15 games. That's way too long. It can't last that many games. Five, if he turns it around Saturday against Florida, and I don't even care about the points, but if he just plays really well in that game, and then, you know, maybe the points follow the next game or something. Okay. Now, look, obviously, like, in playoffs, everything's under a microscope. You can't even go 5 straight cold games. But regular season down the stretch, if this is the last little cold streak and he gets it back on track for the last 5 games and goes into the playoffs playing well, I would say, all right, cool, that's fine. It was a little 5-game blip there. He got it back on track. But if this thing stretches through these last 5 regular season games and continues into the playoffs, that's just way too long. And again, this is a guy who's in a contract year. That would be the kind of thing where I think, like, if he's cold down the stretch and then in the playoffs as well, if you're the Bruins front office, don't you kind of just look at it and be like, we can't deal with this anymore. Like, good luck in free agency. Good luck on your next team. Thanks for some good memories, but this is best for everyone. Whereas if he gets back on track, finishes strong, plays well in the playoffs, all right, now we can talk about an extension. Like, now there's interest there. So I really feel like it's like kind of right on that knife's edge for Jake DeBrusk right now, where it's like, this is going to kind of make or break where your future is.
Yeah. And we've seen it throughout the season, right? It's like, well, when's Don going to make a deal? Is he going to make a deal during the low, after seeing a high, and it looks like we're not going to get that answer till the off season. But in DeBrusk, the numbers, Brian, you mentioned, but also he's moved down in the lineup. He's playing on the third line right now. He obviously there's personnel reasons why. But in the last game, they moved him with Frederick and Boquist, and they moved Geeky up with Coyle and Marshawn. And Geeky did factor in on that Marshawn 400th goal with a really nice pass, like a long distance stretch pass to Marshawn for that breakaway. DeBrusk is also physically down in the lineup compared to where he was playing with Marshawn and Coyle earlier in the year for a lot of the year. I don't know if you guys want to quickly hit on like JVR, Beach, or Lauko, or we do not have a lot of time, so I'll leave it up to Brian.
Yeah, I just want to button up DeBrusk real quick. I just kind of quickly looked, and I think, don't quote me, but because I did it quickly, but I think his 39 points have come in 30 games this year, which means there's 45 games this year where he's played that he hasn't scored at all. And if you, I'm not going to bore everybody here with this, but when, like Scott mentions, like 15 games is too long. Like, when to say that he has cold streaks or cold stretches is really inaccurate. He has cold portions of the season, like legitimately, like 15 games is what percent of a season, right? And if you go on the Bruins website and go under his statistics and click his game log so far this year, you will see, and I just kind of said, there's 45 games where he has 0 points. A lot of those are in chunks. It's like he just...
You're spot on, by the way. I double-checked you. That's 45 out of 75, 0 points.
Right. It's just like that's... So when you scroll down his game log, it's that you're seeing zeros across the board. And then that's where my whole gripe with the player comes in, because a lot of the time people will tell me, well, he's helping him in other ways. Well, I watch him and I don't see him doing all that much when he's not scoring. And last night's an example. Like, he lost so many battles last night. He was so disengaged last night against the Hurricanes. It's like, I'm sorry, but when the player's going, he's literally a different player when he's going. The problem is, over 82 games, he's going for fucking 35 games. Not even. He's going for probably, 20 games, and the other 10 games where he scores, he just finds a point. Like, it's...
I mean, in fairness, like, I do have to say, like, last year it was flipped the other way.
I know, but where... you can't take years off, though. You can't just be that...
I know, but, like, I just want to make it clear. It's not like this is his entire career, but it's... Regardless of how you split it up, like, the inconsistency is...
glaring. I think he's one of the most polarizing... like skaters I've ever watched with the Bruins team because of this reason. He's when he's on, he's fucking on. It's just, he's on so just not nearly enough. And it's when he's not on, it's like, why can't you be on more often than not? Like, not every game, nobody can be, but it's like, you watch David Pasternak, one of the best players in the world. I get it, but like, I'd be curious to see how many games in a row he's gone this year without a point. It's like, and DeBrusk will just go 20 games with 3 points, or it's just like, and I'm not, it's unfair to compare those two players, but when you're a top six forward, you should be held accountable to a higher standard, not Brian, David Pasternak standard, but a higher standard.
Brian, I think it's time for your plumber's meeting, just so you know.
What time is it? Oh shit. Yeah, I gotta go.
You're late.
Okay. All right. That'll wrap it up for this show. Thank you all for listening. Any quick plugs before I go, guys?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks, Bridget.